Thank you, Simon. Good morning, dear listener. This is Ian Lee on BBC Three Counties Radio Breakfast Show this morning. I'm in a surprisingly good mood, considering it was hard work getting up this morning. It was hard work. It's very, very cold. It's sunny and it's beautiful, but it's very, very cold. On this morning show, lots and lots of things for you this morning. Women's IQ is now officially higher than men's. Remember, we mentioned this yesterday. I didn't really understand how the IQ is measured and what it means, and is it any use in the real world? Got someone from Mensa coming on. Yeah, the Posh Brains Club. I know, it's the Posh Brains Club. Genuinely very excited. I'm keen to find out what happens there. I know nothing about it. We'll be talking about Deep Purple. Of course, we'll be discussing G4S, and the debacle continues and gets worse and worse, with the police in Manchester being called in to help out yesterday. And Afghanistani athletes. Yeah, yeah. Now, if I were at home listening to this, I would think that sounds like a pretty good show. As always, really keen for you to take part in the show. That's one of the big things for the next few weeks while I'm here, is I want you to call up and be a part of the show. So if any of these stories affect you, or you want to have your say, or there's things that you think we should be talking about that we're not, 08459 455 555. You can text 81333, start your text 3CR, or email 3CR at bbc.co.uk.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
We'll be discussing IQ after this. Robbie Williams, let me entertain you, innit? Good morning, dear listener. Ian Lee, BBC Three Counties Breakfast. It is 9 minutes past six. Now, yesterday, an IQ expert, says women have overtaken men in IQ tests for the first time since records began. This story was in the papers. I did mention it on the show yesterday morning. And I'm wondering, how do you rate someone's intelligence? And also, what use is it? What does it achieve anything? We've got Chris Tyler on the line who can tell us more about how the tests work. He's the chairman of Mensa, the High IQ Society. Good morning, Chris.
Morning, Ian.
How do IQ tests work?
IQ tests measure intelligence. IQ is a measure of intelligence ability.
Right.
As you've already alluded to, it doesn't mention what people do with it. It purely measures what their potential is, if you like.
And how do these tests work? Sorry, I'm sounding like an idiot because I've never done a Mensa test. I'm aware of some of the finer points, but how does a Mensa IQ test work?
There's a couple of tests. We tend to use a variety of tests or a variety of prior evidence, and really it measures people's ability to process information. One of the tests is based on numbers, one of the tests is based on words, because some people have problems with one, but it doesn't mean they're any less intelligent.
Okay, so if you do struggle with words or numbers, you can still have a high IQ?
Yes, yes. Your IQ is not affected by your ability to, it's purely your ability to process information and solve problems, I suppose.
Now, new research has found that women have overtaken men with higher test results for the first time, I think. Why is that, do you think?
I don't know. My wife's been telling me for years that women are more intelligent, so I guess she's finally been proven right. It seems to be, the report seems to blame it on multitasking, which I think women are always acknowledged at being far better at, I think they say it's down to modern life, that women are now becoming more used to using their brains and processing information that perhaps they've not been encouraged to do before.
But I was always led to believe that women were more intelligent than men in that kind of respect. Not to say that men are stupid, but that at school we're always told that girls are more intelligent than boys. So this kind of surprised me yesterday.
Yeah, school is probably different. School is based on academic achievement,
of course,
which, right, funnily enough, isn't really IQ. So although the two seem to be following the same trend, they're not actually the same thing. And I think that's more down to the fact that the culture among young women is that they work harder and tend to apply themselves better.
What affects a person's IQ score? Is it where they live, where they work, their family life?
It should have no effect at all. IQ tests are, their whole purpose is to normalise them across all sectors of the population. So whether someone comes from an underprivileged background or a privileged background, it doesn't necessarily affect their IQ. A lot of IQ is actually inherited. You get it from your parents. So if your parents are intelligent, hopefully that would be passed down to yourselves.
And if your parents are stupid, then you're in trouble.
Sorry?
If your parents are stupid, then you're in trouble.
Not necessarily, because it's like, you know, it's like, say, height. IQ, height. If your parents are tall, the likelihood is you'll be tall, but it's not guaranteed.
Okay, you can buck the trend. And Chris, what Mensa is a mystery to me, like the Masons. What do you do in Mensa? What do you get out of being part of it?
Mensa has sort of three main purposes. The one that most members probably get involved with is the social interaction. It provides a framework for people to get together socially. So it offers anything from simple local meetings right the way through to large national events attended by several hundred people. And obviously friends, family are welcome along as well. So it tends to be very much a sort of social front to what we do.
And what do you do in these meetings, Chris? Do you just sit around and say clever things, or do you just go to the pub? How does it work?
Again, there's no set trend.
Right.
They Mensons do tend to like to get together and have a chat, but it doesn't tend to be discussions about science or
okay,
it tends
good.
To be any general subject, but with about sort of 30 different viewpoints behind it.
And Chris, what IQ do you need to join Mensa?
You have to be in the top 2%. There are a number of tests which score you, and obviously the scores are at different levels, but as long as it qualifies in the top 2%, you're then eligible to join.
And how would I do one of these? Not suggesting for a second that I would approach anything like that, but if I wanted to have a go, can I do this online, or how do I do it?
We offer home tests, which you can get access to via our website, which is mensa.org.uk, and then we offer attended events where you can go along with a number of people, sit down, take the test. The home test purely gives you an indication of whether you are likely to be eligible to join, and then if you sit the attended test, it will give you an accurate IQ score, and then invite you along if you're in the top 2%.
And is it the polite thing for me to ask you what your IQ is? I don't know the etiquette around this.
In Mensa, there is definitely an etiquette that you do not ask a person's IQ. In nearly 30 years in the organisation, I don't think one person has ever asked me. And as I say, they're welcome to family members along or a friend for support, and no one actually identifies who is the Mensan and who isn't. So,
how interesting. That's fascinating. Chris, listen, thank you so much. You've answered a lot of questions there, and I really appreciate it at this time of morning. Thanks a lot.
No problem. Thank you.
That's Chris Tyler, who is the chairman of Mensa, the IQ Society. It's not the done thing to ask what the person's IQ is. Isn't that interesting? If you're a member of Mensa, or if you consider joining, or if you took the test and failed miserably, 08459 455 555. Can we try and get a league table of how intelligent the listeners are to BBC Three Counties? If you know your IQ, could you give me a call and tell me what it is, and we'll try and get a league table of who are the most intelligent listeners and whereabouts they are. 08459 455 555.
Beds, Hearts and Bugs News.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
These are your headlines on Tuesday the 17th of July. It's 16 minutes, nearly 17 minutes past 6 on BBC Three Counties Radio. Bedfordshire Police Authority says it will continue looking into plans to outsource some backroom services to G4S, despite the company's problems fulfilling its Olympic contract. Peter Conniff, the chair of Bedfordshire Police Authority, says their plan to pursue a full business case hasn't changed, and it will be up to the newly appointed police commissioner to make a final decision later this year. A 30-year-old man from Buckinghamshire has been charged with manslaughter in connection with the death of a 9-week-old baby girl in Amersham in October last year. John Holmes of Pear Tree Close in Amersham has been released on conditional bail until August the 7th, when he will appear at Milton Keynes Magistrate Court. In sport, Luton made a winning start to their pre-season campaign with a 1-0 victory at Hitchin last night, with Adam Watkins scoring just before half-time for Paul Buckle's side. There'll be a full weather bulletin in a moment, and coming up this morning, the spotlight is still on G4S and their failure to recruit enough security staff for the Olympics. Later in the show, we hear from the company's chief executive and the MD for G4S Security at the Games. Always worth a listen. Thoroughly recommend. Oh, you should listen to Nick Coffer today as well, because Barry from Watford is on. Barry from Watford, if you don't know, is a very funny old man, and he's well worth having a listen. So I would check that out from about midday. This is Ian Lee on BBC Three Counties Breakfast. Let's look through some of the front pages of the newspapers, shall we? It's a lot of heavy news out. The Daily Telegraph, immigrants fuel record surge in UK population, and destroy our cyber enemies, says MPs. Destroy our cyber enemies. It's like Doctor Who, isn't it? The Times, coalition support plunges as grim economic news piles up. Basically, we're all doomed. We're in a terrible state. So, and the sun shone in 1948. It might just do the same in 2012. Well, we'll get the weather in a few minutes, and we'll find out. Weathermen are in trouble. I can't remember where I read that. The weathermen are in trouble for being too pessimistic. Someone has come out and said, look, weathermen, you need to just, you know, be a little bit happier and a little bit more up, because you're driving away tourists. Well, they're just reporting on the weather, aren't they? That's all it is. We'll speak to our weatherman in a minute and find out if he's too pessimistic. The Independent, Olympic security, now the army is giving the orders. As foreign athletes start to arrive, military sends officers to G4S HQ to tackle security shambles. Two of the coaches got lost yesterday, containing the athletes. And it was containing the Americans and the Australians. Now, if anybody's going to kick off and cause a fuss, it's the Americans and the Australian athletes. They're not going to take that lying down, are they? The driver of one of them didn't know the route and didn't know how to work a sat-nav. He didn't know how to work a sat-nav. You tap a screen, you type in where you're going, you follow the arrow. That's all you have to do. That's all you have to do. The Guardian, 10 days to the Games, what could go wrong? And police replace missing G4S staff. MOD could provide more troops. The Daily Express has a picture of Holly Willoughby. And migrants flooding back to Britain. They're doing migrants today, the Express. I'm guessing it's going to be mortgages or pensions tomorrow. Should we put money on that? The Daily Mirror, suicide dad kills his three children. That's a terribly sad story. Olympics on the Sun. Oops, road chaos as athletes arrive, security shambles gets worse, and as for that bloody rain. And the Daily Mail, again pursuing the BBC, as is their right, 148 BBC stars avoiding tax. 148 stars avoiding tax. And this is this thing about them setting up separate companies, and they get paid through the separate companies, and blah de blah de blah. When I worked at a commercial station, they made me set up a separate company, and I didn't avoid any tax. I was thinking, oh, I could be quids in here. Didn't avoid, I still paid the same tax, and I had to pay more money to an accountant to set up the business, register it, and do separate accounts on it. So it cost me more money. I was losing money because of this nonsense.
Beds, hearts and weather.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
Let's get the weather news now with Steve. Steve, you lot, yes, are in, sir, trouble.
Yes.
Yeah, have you heard this story that someone... Oh, I don't know story. Who it is. Someone has come out and said, some minister somewhere has come out and said that weathermen are driving away the tourists because you're being so negative.
Okay.
So can you give...
Factual and honest. Yeah.
Can you give the bad news I'm sure is about to come from you, but, yes, but not be so negative?
Oh, no, of course not.
Good
Sunday's
work.
Sunday's a nice day.
Thank you, Steve. Go on.
Say which one.
Yes.
Yes. Which minister was that?
Do you know, I don't know. I'll have the story for the time you come back.
Excellent, yes.
And then we can laugh.
I'll know
not
to vote for him next time.
Yes, exactly. Go on, you tell us what you've got and I'll look for it now.
Could be a her.
It was definitely a bloke.
Oh, it was. Right, him. Right, okay. Today, then, mainly dry with some bright or some sunny spells. An isolated shower is just about possible later this afternoon. Top temperatures should be reaching just above the seasonal average at 21 Celsius at 70 Fahrenheit, with the breeze picking up to a light to moderate west or southwesterly. A mild and cloudy night, but staying mainly dry. The lowest temperature, well, nothing below 13 Celsius, 55 Fahrenheit, with a light to moderate southwesterly breeze. Wednesday, some bright spells, but rather cloudy. There'll be some showery rain coming in, particularly in the afternoon. Thursday, cloudy with rain for a time, perhaps heavy through the middle part of the day. Then it breaks up and turns more showery and brighter later on. Friday sees a mixture of sunny spells and scattered showers, with the showers fading away towards the evening, leaving some longer sunny spells for Friday evening. Saturday, sunny spells, but cloud will bubble up to give one or two afternoon showers, leading into a super day for Sunday. And there's the forecast. Did me best.
You did your best, but then you
put
just
the word sunny before the rain at each occasion, you know.
But then you just sounded sarcastic. I made it even worse.
Me, sarcastic? Oh, come on.
We'll speak to you later on, and I'll find that story for you. Thank you very much. There we go. There's your weather. 08459 455 555 is the telephone number if you want to give me a call. Now, it's been described as a debacle by the Defence Minister. This morning, the spotlight is still on G4S and their failure to recruit enough security staff for the Olympics. More than 3,000 troops have already been asked to make up numbers, and officers from 9 police forces, including Hertfordshire and Thames Valley. Back in January, the managing director for G4S Security Services being delivered at the Olympics and Paralympics spoke to our reporter. Mark Hamilton told Jessica Cooper about the process of recruiting security staff. So that interview with Mark Hamilton, their MD for G4S Security at the Games, was recorded 6 months ago when our reporter Jessica Cooper visited the G4S Training Centre in Stratford in East London. And in the last few days, quite a lot has developed, hasn't it? The boss of G4S, Nick Buckles, will appear before MPs today to explain why his firm has been unable to provide the Olympic security staff it promised. And later on in the programme, we'll be speaking to a security expert from the three counties about how security at large events is changing. Nick Buckles looks like that manager of the hotel. Do you ever see that programme on Channel 4? He's got that same kind of look about him. Diana Ross, why do fools fall in love? This is Ian Lee on BBC Three Counties Radio. Here for the next few weeks. If you'd like to give me a call at any point, you can. 08459 455 555. You can call in to talk about any of the stuff we've been talking about on the show at all. It's time now to get the latest travel news as we approach 6:30 with Sophie Tyler. Thank you very much, Simon.
Across Beds, Hearts and Bucks, this is Ian Lee on BBC Three Counties Radio.
If you could see the things that happen while the news and all the other bits and pieces are going on, it's like a duck, isn't it? A duck swimming. On the top, it's all calm and reserved, and underneath, we're paddling like crazy. This is Ian Lee on BBC Three Counties Breakfast. Good morning, 6:35. Now, one of the... Oh, there we go. That came in a little bit louder than I expected. How often do you get to play this on BBC Three Counties? Not very often at all. Fantastic. One of the founding members of Hertfordshire's rock group Deep Purple, John Lord, has died. He was 71 years old. Been receiving treatment for pancreatic cancer. I get to play this. He co-wrote many of the band's most famous songs, and let's just have a little listen to show, which is some of the superb rock tracks that they played on. I forgot they did Hush. That was because Cooler Shaker did it. And then, of course, it's a Deep Purple song. Fantastic. It's a shame we've got to play it under such sad circumstances, but it's good to hear this. The band formed in Hertford in 1968. They were once listed by the Guinness Book of World Records as the globe's loudest band. A statement on John Lord's website said he had passed from darkness to light and was surrounded by his loving family. Tributes have been pouring in on Twitter, including Brian Adams, who said, "R.I.P. John Lord, incredible organist for Deep Purple, one of my fave bands growing up." And Alice Cooper says, "Heartbroken after hearing that John Lord has passed away. Our thoughts go out to John's family, friends, and indeed Deep Purple." Well, shall we? It's not your typical Three Counties song, is it? But, you know, I'm only here for a few weeks. I can't sneak in a Deep Purple song now, I never can. This is a song about Frank Zappa. True, yes, yes. Deep Purple, Smoke on the Water. That should wake you up, shouldn't it? It's for John Lord, who passed away, the keyboard player. More footballers are in trouble on Twitter. I'm bored of Twitter. I've got about nearly 32,000 followers. I'm bored of Twitter. I've stopped. I go on there every now and then. I go and read it. And I go on there every now and then if I'm doing something, and I'll tweet that I'm doing something. And every now and then I will speak to someone who sent me a message. But I'm bored of Twitter. But there are a lot of weirdos on there. There are a lot of weirdos. And also, people can just be really... If you do something they don't like, which I do quite a lot, they come and tell you. And they don't just say, oh, I didn't really like what you did last night, or didn't think you were that good. They'll tell you in very, very strong language. They'll use indoor language on the internet. Oh, yeah. So I've kind of gone off Twitter a little bit. And also, the way I weaned myself off Twitter, because it is a bit of an addiction, so I can just see my production team in the next studio doing their IQ tests. They've all downloaded an IQ test on their phone, so they're not producing the show. They're testing their IQ to see if they can get into Mensa. If you missed it, go and listen to Play Again later on. But what was I talking about? Yes, Twitter. I was kind of addicted to Twitter and would just tweet everything that I was doing on there. And the way I got around it was I spent a day, instead of tweeting things, I texted my wife the stuff that I would tweet. So I texted her saying... is it the lady's name, Samantha Brick, the lady that said she was really beautiful a few months ago? And I said, I texted my wife saying, oh, Samantha Brick held a door open for me. Oh, I went past this guy from this American sitcom. And all day I kept doing it. My wife got really annoyed with me. But it was a good way of weaning myself off. It was almost like doing cold turkey from a drug. Anyway, there's another footballer, Emmanuel Frimpong. They're all being a little bit vaguely racist on Twitter, which is not nice at all, and thinking they can get away with it. But what the footballers... should have someone who intercepts their tweets before they send them out. Footballers should be able to write a tweet and then give it to someone who goes, nah, you're not sending that. You are not going to send that. It's like angry emails. Ever sent an angry email to someone and then regretted it? Once, years ago, I filmed a whole TV series and then I found out they weren't going to show it. They didn't think it was good enough. And there were two executives at Channel 4. One was a really good friend of mine. And one wasn't a particularly good friend of mine. And I wrote an email to this really good friend of mine who'd kind of canned the show, and I said, oh, and it was very sweary, very angry email, effing and jeffing, expressing my upset at this show being scrapped. And I sent it to him. And then I went, it was about 6 o'clock in the morning, so I couldn't sleep, and I went back to bed. And then about an hour later, I sat bolt upright in bed and thought, I don't think I sent it to him. I think I sent it to the other person. I did. I went down and checked. I'd sent it to the other Channel 4 executive, who was not a particularly good friend of mine and was a very, very powerful woman. And I'd sent her this really strong email, just, you know, laying into them. And I had to write the most grovelling apology ever. It didn't work. Never worked for them again. So, you know, I didn't. Never worked for them again. So, people, listen, if you're involved with Twitter or Facebook or emails or anything like that, just take a long, deep breath, okay, before... write something, leave it for an hour, show it to your wife, show it to your manager, show it to your friends, then come back an hour later and then decide if you want to send it, because it can just do you so much harm. So much harm. This is Ian Lee on BBC Three Counties Breakfast. That's my little rant for the morning. We'll be talking... now, if I say the word free cycle to you, does that mean anything? Free cycle? Or freegal? Does it mean anything to you? Have a think about it, because we'll be talking about it a bit later on. It's kind of been around for a while. I'm really getting into it. Really getting into it. Free cycle or freegal? Just have a think. 81333. Text, start your text 3CR if you know what it is.
Beds, Hearts and Bucks News.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
Good morning, it's Tuesday the 17th of July at 6:45. This is Ian Lee. These are your headlines on this morning on BBC Three Counties Radio. Bedfordshire Police Authority says it will continue looking into plans to outsource some backroom services to G4S, despite the company's problems fulfilling its Olympic contract. Peter Conniff, the chair of Bedfordshire Police Authority, says their plan to pursue a full business case hasn't changed and it will be up to the newly appointed police commissioner to make a final decision later this year. A 30-year-old man from Buckinghamshire has been charged with manslaughter in connection with the death of a 9-week-old baby girl in Amersham in October last year. John Holmes of Pear Tree Close in Amersham has been released on conditional bail until August the 7th, when he'll appear at Milton Keynes Magistrates Court. In sport, Watford play their first match under new manager Gianfranco Zola tonight as they make the short trip to Boreham Wood for a pre-season friendly. And your weather across Beds, Hearts and Bucks, mainly dry with some bright or even sunny spells, but an isolated shower is possible. Top temperature of 21 degrees Celsius. And coming up, we hear how fewer youngsters in the three counties are learning to drive because of increasing costs of lessons.
Call 08459 455 555.
08459 455 555.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
There are five countries who have training camps in Hertfordshire in the run-up to the Olympics. British Virgin Islands, St Lucia, St Kitts and Nevis, Afghanistan and Tajikistan. Didn't even know it was a country. They include one man who's hoping to challenge superstars such as Usain Bolt and Asfar Powell for the men's 100 metres title. The former world champion Kim Collins and his St Kitts and Nevis teammates are training in Watford. And the two strong team from the British Virgin Islands are based in the Hertfordshire village of Ascot. There's also the... If you're going to get a place to go and train, Ascot's a nice place to go and train, isn't it? Some of the places all around the country, you think, well, it's not really so. But Ascot, if you're coming to Ascot, that's great. There's also the small but confident Afghan team. Our reporter Jonathan Josephs has been finding out how they're getting on. They didn't sound like they were from Afghanistan. Of course they weren't. That was Nick Coffer, who's on from midday today, and that proves that I'm an idiot. This is our reporter Jonathan Josephs. I say that as though it will be, fingers crossed. This is our reporter Jonathan Josephs, who's been finding out how they're getting on.
The gentle pitter-patter of rain on the roof of the stand. This is Ridlin Stadium on the outskirts of Stevenage. The pristine red running track might not have 80,000 seats surrounding it, but it's where the British Virgin Islands athletics team are practising for London 2012. There are only two of them. That's the whole team for this tiny Caribbean island nation. The stadium is normally used by North Hearts Athletics clubs as well as amateurs and schools.
My name is Tahisha Harrigan-Scott. I'm from the British Virgin Islands and I'll be competing in the 100 metres. I'm hoping for a personal best of 11:13 or better.
You're doing your preparation just outside London here in Hertfordshire, and it's been raining pretty much non-stop since you got here, hasn't it?
Yes.
How do you feel about that? How does that alter your preparations?
With the cold weather, you know, for a sprinter, you always want the warmer weather. So, you know, it's great that we're actually out here a couple of weeks before my actual first competition to get acclimated to the weather. So, as you know, as time goes on, your body gets used to this cooler breeze. But today actually is the worst day that I've been here in terms of training, because the other days, you know, it'll rain, but during practice time, the weather would be a little bit sunny.
But Hertfordshire does have some plus points for the 30-year-old sprinter. Coming from such a small country, funding for athletes can be a struggle, despite shoe contracts and government support. In the pre-games period, Tahisha is saving on accommodation by staying with a family in the village of Aston. It's given them a chance to get involved with volunteering for the games, and her a memorable first ever overseas camp ahead of a major event.
Hertfordshire is lovely. The family that I'm staying with, Peter and Pauline, even makes it a little bit more memorable because you feel like you're at home. So usually when you're at a competition and you leave your familiar environment, you actually have to just deal with what you get. But with being in Hertfordshire and staying with Peter and Pauline, it's almost like you just went into your other home.
The British Virgin Islands have never won an Olympic medal, and Afghanistan has only done one better, winning bronze in taekwondo in Beijing. It's a feat Ajmal Faizadeh is hoping to match in judo, having trained at the Hearts Sports Village in Hatfield. Ajmal's words are spoken through a translator.
I'm very excited about the here for the 2012 Olympic Games, but I'm trying best to win the competition and win the at least medals for the Afghanistan.
Ajmal says that there is huge support back home for him and his teammates. And whilst he concedes that problems such as security and development are bigger concerns for his fellow Afghans, his immediate worries are quite particular.
In Hertfordshire, we have many facilities here, but only we have one problem, that I don't have a partner to train with me.
The biggest name here now, though, is former 100-metre world champion Kim Collins of St Kitts and Nevis. With less than 2 weeks until the Olympics finally begin, he's in a confident mood.
And I feel that my preparation went very well. I feel good, you know. Most of us, we've been waiting for this 4 years, so we're ready to get it on.
Do you think that you can win your country's first Olympic medal this time?
Definitely, of course. That's what we're here for. I'm going to give it everything I have.
The drains are working overtime to keep the track in a usable condition, and the incessant drizzle and unrelenting wind filling the air of the Ridlin Stadium are a far cry from the heat these Afghani and Caribbean athletes are used to, but it's not dampening their spirits.
And so, for a last word on what training in Hertfordshire might inspire, here's Tahisha Harrigan-Scott to sum up what the Olympics are all about.
We all are athletes and we all put in the preparation and the time. So, you know, if you go out there, you give it all you have, no matter how small or big your country is. If your heart is big and if your focus and your desire is big, then you can pull out miraculous things.
What I liked about that report was the Tahisha there saying, I'm staying with Peter and Pauline. This Peter and Pauline sound fantastic. I want to... Can we get Peter... Let's find Peter and Pauline, who are putting these athletes up. I didn't realise that the athletes were just staying... They're just staying in people's houses, are they? Is that how it works? They just go and stay in people's houses and not hotels. Tahisha there said she was staying with Peter and Pauline. Let's hunt this Peter and Pauline down. I want them on the show. Earlier on in the show, we were talking about IQ tests. And we had Chris on from Mensa. And if you want to give me a call and tell me your IQ, if you've done the test, or if you tried to do the test to get into Mensa but failed miserably, I would love to hear from you. 08459 455 555. Kelly, one of the producers here, just buzzed through, said, I've just tested my IQ. It's 69. That's, you know, we don't judge anyone, but that's... your licence fee pays her wages. How do you feel about that? Good morning, dear listener. This is Ian Lee.
Yeah.
BBC Three Counties Breakfast, here till 9 o'clock, and then Jonathan Vernon Smith will be taking over. And I'm here for the next 3 weeks, and it'll be fantastic if you want to take part in the show at any point. Jot this phone number down. It's going to be very important over the next few weeks, because I'm very keen to get your voices on the show. So if there's anything that we talk about that you've got an opinion on, that you disagree with, that you agree with, that you support, that you hate... then you can give us a call. Or if there is something that you think we should be talking about that we're not talking about, you can also give us a call as well. Sometimes that's how we get some of our best stories. 08459 455 555. 08459 455 555. You can also text 81333. Start your text 3CR. Or you can email 3CR at bbc.co.uk. Later on, we're going to be talking about free cycling. Another version of it is called Freegal. Does that mean anything to you? Ever done it? Any idea? Any guesses? You can give us a call. 08459 455 555. I love it. I absolutely love it. It's a bit odd, and you get to meet some strange characters. I had a very strange woman come around my house once when I was free cycling. Not strange, that's rude. Well, no, she was strange. She was strange. I will be rude. It was a very odd situation that I only felt slightly uncomfortable about. I'll tell you more. Free cycling and Freegal. We'll be speaking to someone from Freegal later on. But if you've any idea what it is, 08459 455 555. Or maybe you've done it. You do it regularly. You can text as well. 81333. Start your text 3CR. Or you can give us an email if you've got one of them swanky computers I've heard so much about. 3CR at bbc.co.uk. I found the story that says that weathermen are making people depressed and making holiday makers stay away. It's not happy reading. We'll be talking about that, free cycling and Freegal, more on G4S, and your phone calls, 08459 455 555. Time now, though, to get the latest news and sport with Simon Oxley. Thank you very much, Simon. This is Ian Lee on BBC Three Counties Radio. It's Tuesday. Is it Tuesday? Yes, the 17th of July. Doing my maths in my head. Yeah, I think that's about right. It's 3 minutes past seven. I'm making sure I get it right. I don't want to give out false information. And it's too early for my brain to be functioning on any reasonable level. It was freezing cold this morning. It's going to be a little bit warmer today, and it's quite bright. But getting out of bed this morning, it was cold. Really, really cold. I'm going to get a bit personal here.
Normally, when I get up in the morning, I have a shower and sometimes a shave, not too often, and refresh myself like that. But because I'm getting up really early, and because it's really, really cold, I'm not having a shower when I come to work. I'm having a bath the night before, and then sort of just, you know, not having a shower. Is that wrong? Is that I always thought people that did that were kind of a little bit dirty, and not in the good sense of the word dirty. But now I'm one of those people. I might run my head under the shower just to kind of wake me up a bit and wet my hair. But that's it. I'm not having a full shower in the morning. I don't know why I'm confessing this to you. I feel that we're kind of bonding on this. So I should tell you all of these things. Coming up, free cycling, G4S, and young drivers. Young drivers. Are you a young person that's about to learn to drive or is learning to drive? It's expensive, isn't it? It's really expensive. Be keen to know exactly how much it does cost. 08459 455 555.
Call 08459 455 555.
08459 455 555.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
The boss of G4S will be questioned by MPs later in the wake of the decision to send in troops to provide security for the London Olympics. The company's chief executive, Nick Buckles, will face the Commons Home Affairs Committee. Officers from 9 police forces, including Hertfordshire and Thames Valley, are providing security. The managing director for G4S Security Services at the Games, Mark Hamilton, spoke to our reporter Jessica Cooper way back in January about the process of recruiting security staff.
Well, we're recruiting directly in excess of 10,000 people. The vast majority will be employed around London.
And can those people apply from outside of London?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're keen on everybody getting the opportunity to work at the Olympic and Paralympic Games. We do have regional requirements, but for people on the outside of the M25, for instance, who can get into London, then this is a great opportunity.
Do people have to have a security background to work on these games? Because surely security is going to be one of the most important parts to make this game, the games, successful.
Yeah, they don't. We want people to come along with good character. People have got a real commitment to be involved in something so important to the United Kingdom, and understand. Actually, security is based on common sense. So it's an ability to learn through the training process, understand once they're deployed that they're part of a team and that they'll receive constant briefing and instructions, and being able to apply them every day.
And for our areas in Beds, Hearts and Bucks, we've got some of the events being held locally to us. Will you be actively trying to recruit people who live nearby?
Oh, absolutely. That's key. When we're in our recruitment process, we're looking at identifying and making sure people are aware that opportunities exist on their doorstep where they are. So, you know, that's definitely part of the plan.
It's Mark Hamilton, MD for G4S Security at the Games, speaking to our reporter Jessica Cooper in January. It sounded so straightforward then, didn't it? Sounded so easy. Oh, yeah, we'll sort this out. It's not a problem at all. 300 million quid, we can sort this out. And it's kind of turned into a farce. Now, if you apply for a job for G4S, or you're working for them, could you give us a call? 08459 455 555. I'd be keen to hear of how it went for you, because we've heard stories of people just saying it was a sham, a farce, that it took ages and it was nonsense. If that was the case for you, 08459 455 555. And likewise, if you applied for G4S and you got accepted and you went through the training and it was all straightforward and you're working now and everything's great, then also let us know, because we've not heard too many sides of that story. And if you or your husband or your wife or your daughter or your son is in the police force or the army and has been called up to help bail G4S out of this mess, the army or the police, we're hearing now, give me a call as well. I'd be keen to know your thoughts on this. 08459 455 555. We're going to talk now to Dr. Julian Richards. He's a security expert from the University of Buckingham. Good morning, Julian.
Good morning.
What's your reaction to how the story has developed over the last few days?
Well, I think there's a slight risk of hysteria. I mean, clearly this is shambolic, and G4S have a lot of rather difficult questions to answer. I think the slight risk is that we all swing back the other way and think that we should never again outsource security or indeed any other government function like this. And I don't think that's the right conclusion to draw in this particular case, because this is going to be a fact of life, I'm afraid.
So are private companies suitable for this kind of job, Doctor? Because this has been a shambles, hasn't it? And it has been a farce.
It has, but if you think about it, this is an extraordinarily large and complex operation. I mean, the Olympics generally and security around it. And it would be difficult for the government to have the right numbers of staff in reserve to deal with this sort of thing. So the basic principle of outsourcing still makes sense, I think. But, as I say, clearly we've got a great deal to learn. This is a bit of a mess, clearly.
And where has it gone wrong, do you think? I mean, is it just the sheer numbers? Is it the incompetence of the company? Is it the government not keeping an eye on things? Where has this gone wrong?
I think it's probably all of the above, really.
Right, okay.
I think this is quite a complicated thing. I think there are issues in how the government lets out these contracts and how it monitors that things are going properly and that targets are being met and so on. I think there are issues there that the government needs to think about. But clearly there are things within the recruitment process. I mean, we've heard that one of the main problems seems to be people not turning up for work. So although G4S thought they had the right numbers of people, the levels of commitment or the bindingness of the contract seems not to have worked. So there's obviously some detailed issues there as well.
That was incredible yesterday when it started off in Manchester. I think it's happening in other places. I think in Manchester, something like 30 out of 50 people didn't bother turning up.
Yes.
And I suppose you can't... Can you blame G4S for that? I don't know if you can, really. Perhaps those people should have been found out in the vetting process. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to know at this stage what the problem was, but, you know, and there is a case that if you work for the government, if you work for the police or the army, the notion of just not turning up for work is fairly anathema, really. So there is something different about if you've just been hired on a temporary contract for a private company, there's possibly slightly less long-term commitment to what you're doing. So we've really got to get to the bottom of these things and find out what the problems have been. But as I say, I don't think this means we need to swing back the other way and say we must never outsource these contracts, because I think that would be the wrong conclusion to draw.
One of the things I heard about G4S and is that the several companies tendered a bid to do the security for the Olympics, and their bid was something like 25% cheaper than the next cheapest bid. And I guess that kind of shows a failing in the government. Whenever you get quotes for building work, you're always supposed to get three quotes. And I never go for the cheapest quote if it's significantly cheaper, because I'm always a little bit worried about what corners they're going to be cutting.
Absolutely. And as I say, there are issues here for the government in terms of developing the right skills and expertise to deal with outsourcing contracts. And, you know, traditionally, it's not something that government have been qualified to do in the past. So they've got to get better at it, and those simple sort of issues like that, we need to learn from this and get better.
Doctor, final question. Two of our police forces in three counties are looking to outsource some backroom services to G4S. What do you think of that plan?
Well, again, and they may not want to hear it, but I think there is a basic logic there. You know, it doesn't make sense for qualified and skilled police officers to be doing some of the very basic things that they're having to do. It is more efficient. It does free up skilled frontline staff for more important roles. So I think there is logic in it, and that's what I'm trying to say here, is that I don't think we should overreact to this situation and say that all outsourcing is bad or wrong. It isn't. It still makes sense.
Dr. Julian Richards, security expert from the University of Buckingham, thank you very much. What do you think, dear listener? 08459 455 555. Does it worry you that the police are considering and still following plans? I think it's gone beyond consideration. I think it's actually going to happen. To outsource some backroom services to G4S. And it is the backroom services. I don't think G4S officers will be out patrolling the streets. I don't think that's going to happen yet. But how does that make you feel? Does that make you feel comfortable? Does that make you feel safe? The doctor there, Julia, made an excellent point that it frees the police to go out and do what the police are supposed to do, i.e. stop crimes and arrest crooks. If they're not in the office filling in bits of paper and filing and doing nonsense like that. Does people still do filing? I don't think offices have filing cabinets anymore, do they? If they're not doing that, then that frees them up to go out on the street and arrest people, which is what we want them to do, isn't it? So maybe it's a good thing.
It's maybe not with G4S. 08459 455 555. Really keen to get your views and your thoughts on this. Do you think it's necessarily a good idea that private companies will soon be doing, possibly, jobs of the police that the police perhaps should be doing? 08459 455 555. Also the number to give me a call if you're in any way connected with the Olympic security, whether you're working for G4S, whether you applied to get there, or whether you or a relative is working for the army or the police and you've been they've been called to step in. 08459 455 555. It's nearly 7:15.
Beds, Hearts and Bugs News.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
These are your headlines on Tuesday, the 17th of July on BBC Three Counties Radio. Bedfordshire Police Authority says it will continue looking into plans to outsource some backroom services to G4S, despite the company's problems fulfilling its Olympic contract. Peter Conniff, the chair of Bedfordshire Police Authority, says their plan to pursue a full business case hasn't changed and it will be up to the newly appointed police commissioner to make a final decision later this year. One of the founding members of the rock group Deep Purple, John Lord, has died. The 71-year-old keyboard player had been receiving treatment for pancreatic cancer. Deep Purple was formed in Hertfordshire in 1968 and are considered to be among the pioneers of heavy metal. In sport, Luton made a winning start to their pre-season campaign with a 1-0 victory at Hitchin last night, with Adam Watkins scoring just before half-time for Paul Buckle's side. We'll have a full sports report with Simon in 15 minutes. We'll also have a full weather bulletin in a minute. And coming up, we will be discussing the government's new plans to spend an extra £9 billion on the railways. £9 billion, including the electrification of the Midland Main Line between Bedford and Sheffield and funding for an east-west rail link between Oxford and Bedford. 08459 455 555.
Jonathan Vernon Smith, weekday mornings from 9 on BBC Three Counties Radio.
It's always worth a listen. He's excellent. And I don't say that, you know, half-heartedly or with my tongue in my cheek. I genuinely think Jonathan is fantastic. This is Ian Lee on BBC Three Counties Radio. This is your breakfast show here till 9 o'clock. Let's have a little look at some of the front pages, shall we? The Guardian. 10 days to the Games. What could go wrong? The Guardian often have fantastic photographs on their front page. And this one is Gabriella Broadhurst carrying the Olympic flame in heavy rain on the torch relay between Bognor Regis and Westergate. And it is chucking it down. And she looks miserable. But she's still doing it. I got to hold an Olympic torch last week. Yeah, I know, I was very excited. And I've got a picture of me holding it. And I am going to tell my son when he's older that Daddy carried the Olympic flame. I'm going to tell him that. You know. Why not? Why not? 10 days to the Games, what could go wrong? That's the front page of The Guardian. They're very light, the torches. I thought they'd be quite heavy. They're not. They're very light indeed. The Daily Telegraph. Immigrants fuel record surge in UK population. These figures are firm. This is the census is in, and the population has gone up by like 1,000,000% or something. I've made that up, but it's quite a lot. These figures are firm evidence that Labour let immigration run out of control. Do you think? Really? Not sure. Oh, wait, 459, 455, 555. Maybe you've... There was a very odd thing on Radio 4 yesterday where they went round one of the areas in London where the population had grown by 25%. And they just asked people, do you think that there's, you know, do you notice there's been a growth in population in your area? They went, yeah. How do you notice there's been a growth of population in your area? You don't notice it. You don't notice it. It just happens. I don't know if there's been a growth in population in my area. There probably has, but I don't notice it. You notice when people from different countries come in because of the accents and things like that. But that doesn't necessarily mean there's been a huge growth in population because people move out. What else? Destroy our cyber enemies, says MPs. Destroy our cyber enemies. It's like war games. Let's play tic-tac-toe. The Times. The sun shone on 1948. It might just do the same. And there's a great black and white picture of John Mark, the British 400-metre runner, carrying the Olympic torch at the opening ceremony of the 1948 Games. Also, coalition support plunges as grim economic news piles up. The Daily Express. Migrants flooding back to Britain. A wave of migrants pouring into Britain has sparked the biggest population explosion in history, official figures reveal. So they've got the evidence that they need to jump down the throats of everyone. And the Mail.
148 BBC stars avoiding tax. MPs attack immoral tactics of presenters who reduce their tax bills by being paid through private companies. I was paid through a private company for a while. I'm not now. When I was at a commercial station, they insisted that I set up a private company to be paid through. There were literally zero tax benefits to me. I was paying more money because I had to pay tax on all the money I earned. And then I had to pay an accountant to set up the company, to do the accounts on the company. So it cost me a couple of grand more. It was ridiculous. I was well annoyed. Very, very annoyed. I'll stop on the mail with good reason.
Beds, Hearts and Bucks weather.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
We've got Steve Weston with the weather. Steve, I found that story.
Ah, excellent.
This, right. It's from the Daily Mail.
Ah, yes, of course.
Of course. I'm reading it from the Mail Online. Look on the sunny side of life. Tourism boss says weathermen are obsessed with rain. As a tourism chief battling one of the soggiest summers on record, Malcolm Bell might be excused for cursing the heavens above. Perhaps surprisingly, however, he has a more earthly target. Mr. Bell doesn't just blame the weather for putting a dampener on his year, but also the weathermen and women, it's 2012, who predict it. Forecasters are obsessed with rain, he claims, delighting in highlighting the bad days and ignoring dry and sunny spells. Is this true, Steve?
I don't know. I just do it, you know.
Well, you just say what happens, don't you?
Yeah, well, we you know, do our calculations and, you know, and then sort of put the numbers that the computers print out into words, and then we say them. We don't deliberately tell lies. I mean, if I was to bend it in the other way, he's fallen into the actual real trap of, you know, you desperately want some nice weather, yeah. So you imagine that's what's going to happen, and okay. when it doesn't, you look for someone to blame.
This is the Visit Cornwall chief, Malcolm Bell. Steve, I'm going to ask you a question. I want you to answer it honestly, then yep. I want you to give me the weather.
Yep.
If you're at work, and there's all of you around you, all of your weather computers, I don't know how it works, and then someone goes, "We've got a tornado coming, guys!" Do you all stand up and high-five each other?
No, we all run to the window and see if we can see it.
Let's have the weather news, Steve.
Yes, some bright spells today. Should stay mainly dry, although one or two spots of rain are likely towards the end of the day. It's going to cloud up a little bit, but I think the words mainly dry for today apply. And there's the happy weather forecast from me, Steve Weston.
Thank you, Steve. I think I've annoyed Steve by reading him that story. So if I've upset you, Steve, I do apologise. Now, fewer youngsters in the three counties are applying for provisional licences and not taking their driving test because of the increasing costs of lessons. How much do they cost these days? Can someone give me a call and let me know? What does a driving lesson cost these days? When I did my driving lessons 22 years ago, my God, I am old. They were £14 an hour. I'm guessing they're a little bit more than that. We had a little scam as well. They were cheaper, bizarrely, if you booked them up north. And my dad was working in Newcastle at the time. They were £11 an hour if you booked them. So my dad booked all of my lessons in Newcastle for £11 an hour and then just transferred them down there. £11. What are they now? 08459 455 555. A government survey found that 17 and 22-year-olds are also being discouraged by the expensive insurance premiums. On top of that, there was a slump in the number taking their driving test last year. Compared to 2005, an annual drop of 200,000. Reporter Serena Farrow spoke to some students at Milton Keynes College in Bletchley. They're currently taking lessons and finding it a struggle to pay for them.
I've had about 10 to 12 lessons, paying like £23 a lesson though. But it's privately, so that's only why I'm paying so much, pass quicker. Insurance, I've been quoted like, my stupidest quote was £32,000. On a 1-4 civic, because my age, 18.
And have you done your theory and everything already?
Yeah, I passed that second go. That's like, what, £30 a go? So that's £60 out the window already, and 10 lessons is like £230.
And it isn't the bank of mum and dad either?
It is, but then I felt guilty, so I paid them back, so...
Do you have a part-time job?
Yeah, I'm working at a garage at the moment.
I guess you have to have one, otherwise you wouldn't be able to afford...
Yeah, literally, you have to, otherwise you're walking everywhere.
Done 6 so far.
And you're how old again?
17. £20.
And you work?
Yeah.
Part-time?
Part-time, yeah.
And what about the cost of fuel and insurance? Is that worrying you?
Yeah, a little bit.
You're going to have to work harder?
Yeah, I get a full-time job to pay for that.
What are you looking at insurance? You know what ballpark figure you're going to have to pay out?
Probably £2,000-£3,000.
What car are you having, then, Evo?
Is it really that much?
Yeah, it is quite high.
That's just for, like, normal 1.4, whatever, yeah. Bulk standard.
Kathleen Kirkland, driving instructor in Milton Keynes, at Kathleen School of Motoring. A few years ago, it was definitely 80% of my client base were 17-year-olds, whereas now I think possibly about 50% are 17-year-olds now.
As few as that. And what are you putting it down to?
Everything in this world is costing us a fortune now. Fuel is astronomical. So not only once someone passes their test, they've then got to put fuel in their car and they've got to insure their car. So, and that's unachievable by most accounts. And then the young 17-year-olds are going off to university. University costs have gone sky high. And not many of the young 17-year-olds have got a part-time job as they used to have. So they had some disposable income, whereas they don't have the disposable income anymore. So it's a little bit more difficult for them to learn to drive, to pay for the lessons.
Because for the rest of us who passed decades ago, how much is a lesson nowadays?
Around sort of £20-25 an hour. Average, it's going to take you about 40 hours to pass your driving test. However, it's kind of worked out on two lessons for every year your age. So if you're sort of 60, it's going to take you 120 lessons, which is quite a long time, isn't it, really?
That's an infinity. Do you get the common complaint, oh, they're really expensive, the lessons, I can't afford them?
Oh, you do get a few people that ring up and say, oh, how much do you charge? Or probably more than before, actually. You know, but if somebody wants to pay £10 a lesson, then how are they going to put fuel in their car when they pass the test? It is a problem for some people. They just want the licence, but what are they going to do with it once they've got it? They might as well wait and use their money on something else, really. And until they can afford to put fuel in their car. There are some companies out there that put black boxes in the cars, and they're limited to the hours that they drive after 11 o'clock, midnight, something like that. And also there's ones that monitor how many miles they travel, the speed that they travel, acceleration speeds, etc. So then they can judge whether they're, you know, a high-risk driver or not, and that can reduce their insurance policy. But, I mean, that essentially is for younger drivers. But that's the only way around that they can manage it, really.
Mums and dads, how are you paying for the driving lessons of your kids? Do mums and dads still pay for driving lessons? I'm keen to know. My boy's only 2.5, so I've got quite a way to go before I even have to deal with this issue. But I seem to remember my mum paying for most of my lessons, and I contributed some of it with the money I earned when I earned my Saturday job at B-Jams. You're too young to know what B-Jams is. B-Jams is now Iceland. My first Saturday job started when I was 15. So mums and dads, do you pay for it? 08459 455 555. A little bit later on, I may tell you how much my car insurance is. Oh, it's very expensive.
Call 08459 455 555.
08459 455 555.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
You've been texting in about all kinds of different things. We'll be talking about free cycling and Freegal in a little bit. But first of all, well, Vic suggests, is free cycling going for a bike ride on someone else's bike? No, Vic, it is not. Pat in Boreham Wood did an IQ test and scored 148. I have two people working with me on this show in the next studio. One of them scored 91, one of them scored 69. Yeah, I know. I'm going to do one after the show. If it's over 100, I'll tell you what it is. If it's not, forget I did it. Steve says, if hypothetically an outsourced provider of backroom police services commits a crime, can it be properly investigated with objectivity? Steve, I think the answer to that question is yes, it can. very quickly, we've got loads of stuff. We're going to talk about free cycling. We've got some Olympic stuff coming up in just a second. But you see, this is a story in the Mail today. The Mail is, by the way, fast becoming my favourite newspaper, despite everything. It's becoming my favourite. A publisher of adult fiction is planning to release erotic versions of many of the best-known works of English literature. Clandestine Classics. Clandestine? Where we are. Follows the success of E.L. James's 50 Shades of Grey. The publisher claims the more explicit versions of such works, of works such as Wuthering Heights and Jane Eyre, will bring them to a new generation of readers. Well, the Mail has some extracts from The Pride and Prejudice, the reboot. I think I can read this. Still not quite sure what the BBC's limits are, so maybe we'll find out. So, the original. Jane, be still a few moments. You are overexcited. I will be still too. Mr. Rochester sat quiet, looking at me gently and seriously. Some time passed before he spoke. He at last said, come to my side, Jane, and let us explain and understand one another. That's all right, that's fine. The updated version. Jane, be still a few moments. You are overexcited. I will be still too. My master captured my wrists and secured them behind my back, imprisoning me and preventing my movements. Then it gets a little bit dirty. I can't read the next paragraph. I've censored that. Then the final, no matter how I control my mind, my very flesh was weak. Really? I'll be honest. I think we can be honest. Jane Austen, very dull read, isn't it? Very dull read. Maybe sexing up is the way to go with these books. If you can think of any other books or films that are perhaps a little bit boring and could do with a bit of 50 Shades of Grey, a little bit of sexing up to make them a bit more interesting, you can text that in, 81333. 81333. Start your text 3CR, if you wouldn't mind. We are now just 10 days away from the start of the Olympic Games, and yesterday the first athletes started arriving in London. A Hertfordshire woman, who's a housekeeper in the Olympic Village, has decided to donate all of her wages to charity. Our reporter, Justin Dealey, has been to meet Julia this morning.
So, Julia, you start on Monday. You're thoroughly looking forward to it. 10 days' work. How did you get this job in the first place?
Well, I was originally going to work for G4S as a security guard or door supervisor, but I decided not to. About the same time, a friend told me about the HUT organisation and that they do cleaning jobs in the Olympic Village, and I decided, why not?
And you had a bad feeling about GS4, didn't you? Intelligent girl, you knew what was coming.
I did, yeah. Well, I didn't feel really prepared to do the job, and not saying anything bad about my colleagues, but some of them weren't suitable for the job, and some of them didn't really speak English too.
Very, very interesting what you're saying there. So you're working between 8 and 4. What exactly will you be doing within those hours?
Well, I'll be doing housekeeping. I'll be cleaning the rooms in the Olympic Village.
And you're giving every single penny to charity. So 10 days' work. How much money do you hope to raise in those 10 days?
Should be about £480.
And we're talking about a lot of money here. You're doing a very, very hard job. It's long hours. Have people said to you, you're absolutely mad, you should be keeping this money for yourself? What have your family said about this?
Well, my parents did say, well, that's a lot of money. You must have a lot of money to give a lot of money to the charity. And some friends even said, why don't you keep it? But I don't want to keep it.
You're sticking to your guns. You're going to donate every single penny to charity.
Definitely. Well, it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
So the charity we're talking about here, it's Hearts Action on Disability. Why have you chosen this particular charity to give all this money to?
First of all, I know some people who work there, so I know that the money I give to the charity is definitely going to go to the charity and not to some private bank accounts. And I do like what they're doing. They offer, like I say, therapies and driving school equipment and all sort of things to disabled people, any age, and old people.
And what about connections as well? Has somebody in your family suffered with disability?
Yeah, my grandfather is disabled. Well, in the way that he can't move, he's not able to walk, and he's not really able to manage his daily life by himself.
So what's next for you then? Off the back of the Olympics, some other jobs which you're going to donate all the money to?
I don't know yet.
But you're actually looking forward to it, though, aren't you? Because, as you say, you think that this is a once-in-a-lifetime. To be involved anyway is fantastic. But to actually be there, be involved, donate money, as far as you're concerned, everyone's a winner.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, that's very noble, isn't it? I don't think I'd be quite so generous. Fair play to her. Well done. Fantastic to be doing that. Could you do that? Be as generous as that? I don't think so. I give a bit of money to charity. I do charity work. I do bits and pieces. I once won, get this, I was on The Weakest Link, right? Celebrity version. Yeah, I know. I won it. £20,000 to charity. £20,000. I won it by cheating. I think I can say this now. Enough time has passed. It was... The Weakest Link is the weirdest thing to be on. Right. And I was... It was all comedians, and it was like old school comedians, and I would guess what you would call alternative comedians. We all voted Bernard Manning off in the first round because he was just horrible in the green room. Just horrible. But so the end, the last round, this is so odd. It was me stood next to Eddie Large, and on the other side was Jim Bowen. And I initially voted Jim Bowen off, but then I saw that Eddie Large had voted for me. Because I looked over his shoulder and I saw he'd voted for me. And so I changed it and I voted for Eddie. I had to take the gamble that Jim Bowen would also vote for Eddie Large. So I then voted for Eddie Large. We got him booted off. Got him booted off. It's me in the final. And the question that I struggled with it was about the owl and the pussycat. What do they eat? Quince. They eat quince. And I'd only remembered this because I'd read it to my nephew, I think, like a week before. But I didn't know what the word... I didn't know if it's quince or quins. And Anne Robinson says, spell it. I didn't know if it was a Z or a C. And so I'm panicking. And I swear that Jim Bowen, under his breath, went, C. And I don't know if he was telling me or if he was thinking out loud in the way that some people do, but I had that, and I won £20,000. By my reckoning, I never have to do another charity gig ever again. That's a lot of money, isn't it? I didn't have to run a marathon for it. I just had to be humiliated by Anne Robinson in a studio full of people. It's a very surreal experience. When you go on those kind of shows, I did Mastermind as well. I don't want to boast, but I won it. But when you do those shows that are so iconic, and you just, you know, the weirdest thing about Mastermind was I wasn't nervous, and you're sat in the row of four of you, wasn't nervous, and then the music started and the lights went down, and suddenly I went, oh, hang on, I'm on Mastermind. My chosen specialist subject on Mastermind was fictional pop group The Monkees. Yeah, I know. You can choose anything. The Monkees. I got 15 points right in the first round. I beat Scott Mills, a Nolan, and is it Jimmy McGovern, the guy that writes Cracker, I think? Beat him. And you'd think he'd be quite good, but I beat him. An American man who learned to use a parachute as a Navy pilot in the Second World War has finally made his first jump at the age of 90. What? Lester Slate said the tandem jump was a birthday present to himself, and he enjoyed it so much he's planning another in 5 years' time. Jumping out of an aeroplane, anything that involves height and potential death, does not interest me in the slightest. I have absolutely zero interest in doing anything like that. Fair play to him for doing it at the age of 90. I'm looking forward to being old. If I'm alive at 90, and I'm not that bothered about living that long, to be honest. Get to about 75, I'll be happy. But if I'm alive, I will just be sitting in a chair watching Jeremy Kyle and barking orders at people. That's what I want to be doing at 90. I want to be shouting at a nurse that I need a new cushion and a cup of tea. I cannot wait to be an old man, because I'm going to be an excellent old man. I'm going to be so grumpy. It's going to be wonderful. Anyway, are there things that you've never got round to doing that you've always thought, ooh, do you know what, I'd like to do a bungee jump or jump out of an aeroplane or ride a motorbike? Is there anything, as you're listening to this, that you think, never done that, and maybe I never will, but I would really like to? This guy was 90. He jumped out of an aeroplane for the first time after training 60 years ago, 70 years ago. 08459 455 555. Let me know the things that you have never got round to doing, but that you really want to. You can email as well, 3cr@bbc.co.uk, or text 81333. Start your text 3CR.
Beds, Hearts and Bucks News.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
7:45, these are your headlines on Tuesday the 17th of July on BBC Three Counties Radio. Bedfordshire Police Authority says it will continue looking into plans to outsource some backroom services to G4S, despite the company's problems fulfilling its Olympic contract. Peter Conniff, the chair of Bedfordshire Police Authority, says their plan to pursue a full business case hasn't changed, and it will be up to the newly appointed police commissioner to make a final decision later this year. One of the founding members of the rock group Deep Purple, John Lord, has died. The 71-year-old keyboard player had been receiving treatment for pancreatic cancer. Deep Purple was formed in Hertfordshire in 1968 and are considered to be among the pioneers of heavy metal. In sport, Luton made a winning start to their pre-season campaign with a 1-0 victory at Hitchin last night, with Adam Watkins scoring just before half-time for Paul Buckle's side. The weather for Beds, Hearts and Bucks mainly dry, with some bright or even sunny spells, but an isolated shower is possible, top temperature of 21 degrees Celsius. Coming up on The Breakfast Show this morning, before 9, Bedfordshire Police Authority says it will continue looking into plans to outsource some backroom services to G4S, despite its problems fulfilling its Olympic contract. After 8 a.m., it's kicking in, we'll speak to Peter Conniff, the chair of Bedfordshire Police Authority. Good morning, this is Ian Lee on BBC Three Counties Radio. We can go through the rest of the front pages of the newspapers if you'd like us to do that. We only got halfway through before we were stopped. The Independent. Olympic security, now the army is giving orders. As foreign athletes start to arrive, military sends officers to G4S HQ to tackle security shambles. Surely that should make us all feel more comfortable, shouldn't it? The fact that the army are going in there and taking control of it, this is going to be the safest Olympics in the world. I was listening to a report yesterday from an Olympics expert. You can become an expert in anything. An Olympics expert. And he said that This happens every single time. Every time there is an Olympics, things go wrong with the security and with the roads and with all of these things. And we don't get to hear about it because it's not in our country. So it'll happen. We heard about the Greeks not finishing or the stadiums and things like that because that was big. But all the kind of finer points, like the security and the trouble with the roads, that you just don't get to hear about it because that's kind of important in that country, but not to anyone else. There's a brilliant picture in one of the papers of one of these Olympic lanes in London where it's two lanes and the left lane becomes a bus lane and then the right lane becomes an Olympic lane and there's nowhere for cars to go. So it kind of turns into a V and the road disappears. Fantastic. And there's also a picture on the Independent. Empire on trial. Kenyans demand justice 60 years on. And that's it's quite an impressive picture there. The front page of The Sun. Olympics only 10 days to go. Oops. Road chaos as athletes arrive. Security shambles get worse. And as for that blooming rain, athletes began arriving in London for the Olympic Games yesterday to be greeted by road chaos, a deepening security shambles, bungling bus drivers and pouring rain. One of the bus drivers, two of the coaches got lost. And one of the bus drivers didn't know the route and didn't know how to work a sat-nav. Right. If I were doing a really important journey, driving, lots of really important visitors, I would probably go and drive the route the day before. If I didn't do that, I would at least look at it on a map and make sure I knew how to work the equipment that was going to tell me how to get there. What a muppet. 08459 455 555. And the front page of the Daily Mirror, suicide dad kills his three children, which is a terribly sad story, and it's in all of the papers in various contexts and going into various depths, and it's a terribly sad story. If you want to give me a call this morning, 08459 455 555. We were talking about it on the show yesterday, and David Cameron says it's the biggest modernisation of the rail network since the Victorian era. The government is going to spend an extra £9 billion on the railways, but passenger groups are warning of higher fares. The plans include electrification of the Midland Main Line between Bedford and Sheffield and funding for an east-west rail link between Oxford and Bedford, which will include Aylesbury and Milton Keynes. We're going to talk now to Milton Keynes South MP Ian Stewart. He chairs the east-west rail all-party parliamentary group. That's a bit of a mouthful. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning.
What are going to be the benefits of the east-west rail project?
Well, it will open up a good east-west communications corridor with Milton Keynes at its heart. We've always had good north-south links, but east-west have been poor. The roads east-west are very often congested and journey times are slow, so this will speed up transport links. It will generate, it's forecast to generate about 12,000 new jobs, both in the construction and in encouraging inward investment into the area. And it'll be better for the environment because it's expected to shift quite a number of passengers from road to rail.
Are those 12,000 new jobs, are they going to be locals?
Well, it'll be a mix of people employed to actually construct the line, and you know, Network Rail's got its headquarters in Milton Keynes now, so a lot of them will be local. But the main benefit is attracting new companies into the area by linking the Thames Valley, Oxford, Milton Keynes, Bedford, and then in its second phase eastward to Cambridge. You'll be building a very sort of high-tech line, and all the forecasts are that will encourage companies to locate in the area and employ local people.
And when is this likely to happen, Ian?
The consortium who are doing the project are still finalising the detailed construction plans, but it's hoped to have the first trains running by 2017 at the latest.
Now, if the government is spending £9 billion improving the railways, is there any need for HS2 to be built through Buckinghamshire?
Well, that's a separate argument. One of the concerns was with HS2 that it would suck away all the investment in what's known as the classic railway network. And I think yesterday's announcement disproved that you can invest in both. With regards to High Speed 2, I think there is a case for building a new strategic north-south railway line because the existing lines, even with the upgrades that are planned, are going to run out of space over the next 20 years or so. So whether HS2 is exactly the right answer, I remain to be convinced. I think there might be better options about how we do it. But the two, you need to look at the two arguments separately. Mm. They're not dependent on each other.
I know this is slightly out of your remit, but if you can't answer it, then don't answer. But you said there might be a couple of other better options than HS2. What would one of those be, for example?
Well, I think there is a case for building a new fast line between London, connecting to the Midlands, the north of England and Scotland. I would actually prefer to see it follow an existing motorway path, either say the M40 or the M1. There are different options. Because if you look at the continent, in Germany, for example, they've built a line alongside a motorway, and it reduces the noise and the environmental impact that a lot of people have got justifiable concerns about. I also think we need to look more closely about how we connect airports to it. In fact, we have a debate on that in Parliament this afternoon. So I am supportive of the idea in principle, but as I say, I think there might be better options on the table.
You've just said something that's so ridiculously obvious that had never occurred to me, building it parallel with a motorway. That makes complete sense, because then there's hardly any disruption to the countryside.
Well, that's right. I mean, we've already done it in this country. If you look at the High Speed 1, which links London to the Channel Tunnel, if you ever travel along it, for a large part of the route, you're running parallel to the motorway through Kent. And you actually, if you're standing in the location, as I've done in sort of doing some research for this, you can hardly hear the noise of the train over the noise of the cars in the motorway. So it makes sense to me.
All this investment is great, the £9 billion, because we're going to get new rail lines, we're going to get better trains, it's going to create jobs, and it's investment, which is needed. But it's going to be, it's going to mean higher fares. There's going to be increases in fares, aren't there?
Well, there is, fares have been rising over the last 20-odd years. I don't deny that. And transport generally is quite expensive at the minute because of the high cost of fuel. Mm. But one thing the government's also doing is looking at how we can reduce the costs of running the railways, making it more efficient. And that's a consultation that's going on at the minute, and the Transport Select Committee I'm on scrutinising it. So the hope is that by making the railways more efficient, will actually be able to reduce the burden on the fare-paying passenger.
So, but that doesn't mean reducing the ticket prices. That means that the increase might not be as much.
Well, potentially, yes. And actually, if you look at last year, there were quite high increases forecast, but the government said, no, that's too much for this year, particularly with the cost of living generally. So it stepped in to limit those rises. I can't sit here and pretend there's never going to be a fare increase at any time over the next 10 to 20 years. But I think there are a number of steps that we can do to make the rail industry more efficient.
I love getting the train. I think there's no better way to travel than the train. You've got a few hours. You can take a laptop. You can do some work. Watch a film. You could have a doze, whatever. But it's very expensive. I'm going to Glasgow in October. It's cheaper for me to fly. That seems crazy that it's cheaper to get an aeroplane than to sit on a train. So I'm going by plane.
Well, actually, it depends how you want to buy your ticket. If you just turn up at the station and say, I want a return ticket to Glasgow, yes, it is going to be eye-wateringly expensive. As it is if you turn up at the airport and say, I want just to turn up and fly. But on the railways, if you book in advance, you can select which train you're on, you can get some very good prices there. My parents still live in Scotland, and I went up, had a return ticket for well under £100 not that long ago.
But that still seems expensive. My flight to Glasgow, I think, it's about £85, I think, there and back.
Yeah, but then you've got your cost of travelling to the airport and parking your car or taking
a
taxi.
Right.
If you look at the whole journey cost, yep. I think the rail industry is pretty competitive.
Ian, thank you very much. That's Milton Keynes South MP Ian Stewart, who chairs the East West Rail All Parliamentary Group. What do you think about this? Does it sound like a good deal? 08459 455 555 is the telephone number. I've got some texts in. Where did I put my texts? I put them over here. Look, here we go. You can text 81333 3CR. And I think it's really important. If you want to claim ownership of this show, then do get in touch via the email and via the texts and via the telephones. Because otherwise it's just me wittering on. And I get bored of my own voice. Imagine how you guys feel. Linda says, there's nothing new about revamping books. So this is the sexing up of the classics. Several years ago, adult versions of classic fairy tales were written and well read. Definitely gets the book more interesting. Really? There are mucky versions of fairy tales out there? And Phil says, I really don't envy school leavers trying to get a driving licence and insurance. Without them, getting a job and career is much harder. My insurance is £153. Phil? £153 car insurance? How is that even possible? That's incredible. What are you driving, like a C5 or something? 08459 455 555. Let's compare car insurance, shall we? I'll tell you mine in a little bit. Good morning. It's coming up to 8 o'clock. This is Ian Lee on BBC Three Counties Radio. Coming up in the next hour, we do more on G4S. Talk about same-sex marriage. And Jonathan Vernon Smith will pop in to tell us what's in on his show. Before that, here's the news and sport with Simons.
This is Ian Lee on BBC Three Counties Radio.
Thank you, Simon. Good morning. This is Ian Lee on BBC Three Counties Radio. Here till 9 o'clock. And then Jonathan Vernon Smith comes in and takes over. He'll be in about 10, 15 minutes or so to tell us what's happening on his show. Coming up in this half hour, and I know you have opinions on some of these, more on G4S, and also same-sex marriage. We'll be speaking to the Bishop of Bedford, who opposes gay marriage. But really, is there anything wrong with it? Why shouldn't we be celebrating the fact that people are in love and want to indulge in a committed relationship? 08459 455 555. If you've got an opinion on that, we'd love to hear you. You can text 81333. Start your text 3CR. Or you can email, that's the word, isn't it? Yes. BBC. 3CR at bbc.co.uk.
Call 08459 455 555.
08459 455 555.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
Olympic Security is in the spotlight again this morning. The boss of the private security firm G4S will appear before MPs today to explain why his company failed to provide the staff it promised to guard the Games. Thousands of troops and police officers have had to be drafted in at the last minute to cover the shortfall. Our reporter James Alexander has got more. Good morning, James.
Morning, Ian.
Questions about Olympic Security, they just keep on coming, don't they?
Yes, questions for the chief executive of G4S. He's Nick Buckles. He'll appear before the Home Affairs Select Committee at midday. And as if it wasn't bad enough, last week when we heard 3,500 extra soldiers were being called on to fill the shortfall left by G4S, now hundreds of police are also having to step in. Out of 12 forces with Olympic events on their patch, 8 have now had to backfill for G4S because their people simply haven't showed up.
Do we know how many guards G4S are going to actually be able to provide?
No, is the short answer.
Okay.
You may find, yeah, fairly incredible, given that there's been 8 years of planning. There's only 10 days to go now to the start of the Olympics. The company were contracted to supply 10,000 staff. They say they have recruited, trained and kitted out more than enough to fill the rota. But the problem is, Ian, many people are just not turning up. For example, up in Salford, at the hotel being used by the Great Britain football team, only a third of the guards promised by G4S actually arrived for work.
Wow.
And this has meant that the police there have had to step in at a cost of £30,000 a day.
And who's going to pay for all of this?
Well, this is one of the questions MPs will want to ask the boss of G4S, because his firm is getting £280 million to deliver Olympic security. So what compensation will the company pay to cover the costs of bringing in first the army and now the police at the last minute? MPs will also want to know why the alarm wasn't sounded sooner.
Well, what about the government? Because the ministers must have known that there were problems looming.
Well, this is what Labour say. Surely ministers were meeting with G4S to make sure everything was on track. Ministers say yes, they were meeting, and G4S was repeatedly promising it would exceed targets. The Home Secretary says the first she knew about gaps in security was last week, as recent as that, and the government acted quickly to fill the hole.
In the run-up to Olympics, it's a huge event, isn't there? There's always some last-minute crisis. Is this something that we're going to forget as soon as the Games begin?
Well, yeah, all big events, Olympics, World Cups, you often get a few last-minute hitches in the run-up, traffic jams, bags going missing, buses going round and round. And, yeah, if the Games are a big success in a couple of weeks' time, we're all talking about British athletes and gold medals, then chances are this little row will all be forgotten. But if there is a big security lapse, that'd be damaging not just for G4S, but also for the government and for Britain's reputation in the eyes of the world.
James, thank you very much. That's James Alexander, our reporter. We'll be speaking to him, no doubt, as this story continues. Bedfordshire, more on G4S. They're everywhere, aren't they? Nick Buckles, the head of G4S, is my new favourite person. Just because do you ever see the programme on Channel 4, The Hotel? It followed around a hotel in Torquay, and it followed the manager of this hotel, and he was bumbling, and he was wonderful and lovable, but he was an idiot. Okay, that was the basic premise. He was a complete plum. And I interviewed him, and he was such a nice bloke. I think his name was Mark. Well, Nick Buckles looks exactly like him. They've got the same sort of silvery mullet. It's very similar look. Go and Google them later on. They should be doing a fly on the wall documentary on Nick Buckles. Anyway, Bedfordshire Police Authority says it will continue looking into plans to outsource some backroom services to G4S, despite its problem fulfilling its Olympic contract. Surrey Police has halted some privatisation plans after security firm G4S failed to get enough staff for the London 2012 Olympics. But the plans remain unchanged in Hertfordshire and Bedfordshire. Peter Conniff is chair of Bedfordshire Police Authority. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
Peter, this was agreed at a meeting a few weeks ago. Just remind us, what is being proposed and what was decided?
Right, well, at the Police Authority meeting that was held on June 28th, what Bedfordshire Police Authority decided was that we would look at two options for reorganising the organisational support and function within Bedfordshire Police. There's an option to develop an in-house solution, and there is also an offer to explore an outsourcing solution. The outsourcing solution was G4S. Obviously, the in-house solution is in-house. Since then, obviously, we've heard the news about the Olympics and other things, but at the current time, as I speak with you this morning, the resolution made on June 28th to explore both those options equally is still in place.
But surely with everything that's happened and with the incompetence the company have shown, you have to be favouring the in-house solution, don't you?
I don't think we favour anything before we've got both the full business cases before us. To work up and business cases is a considerable amount of work. What we decided on June the 28th, we would do those pieces of work for both G4S and the in-house solution. And the whole point of doing a full business case is to explore exactly the sort of incidents and risks that you've been talking about on your programme this morning. When, in fact, we have got both those business cases before us, the police authority, both here and elsewhere, won't make that decision as to which way we go down. If we go down either of those ways, it'll be left to the new coming and elected Police and Crime Commissioner.
How much does it cost to do these reports?
I can't give you a figure off the top of my head for that, but it's very labour intensive. We use in-house facilities to do that, and also both the reports will be fully vetted by independent and external validators. But as I say, the information will be there on those two options when the new PCC arrives in post following his or her election.
Oh, I'm sure I'm sure you're going to do a very thorough job, as you should do, and congratulations for that. It just worries me that perhaps G4S are costing even more money indirectly.
Sorry, I don't think I understand.
Well, just in as much as if you're spending money on a report on a company that's obviously incompetent, then that's more money that they're costing.
Certainly, I mean, it will cost money to do that report, to build up that business case, which would be very thorough indeed. All the risks will be looked at. I have to say that currently G4S are in excellent partnership with Lincolnshire Police Authorities. It's early in that arrangement, but that arrangement is going extremely well, and that's one of the reasons why ourselves, Surrey, I think it's Western Midlands, have all decided to look at what they can offer. But now, of course, what risks that might pose.
Well, sorry if police have halted some of the privatisation plans, I think. Were there ever any other companies, apart from G4S, in the running?
Yes, we had. I mean, I wouldn't be able to say who they were.
No, of course.
But we had seven options, I think it was seven or eight options that we looked at in terms of an outline business case, which is a very quick look and to see what they could offer. And obviously when you get that number of people providing an option for you, some of those will very quickly be ruled out for a whole variety of reasons. They can't produce on time, etc., etc.
Is cost one of those reasons?
It isn't, because we don't actually know what the costs are until we've done the full business case. And that's part of the problem, of course. You know, we need to know what it's going to cost, and therefore, equally, what it's going to save. We're faced with saving nearly £20 million for the next 4 years. We've got to look across every area of policing to see how that can be done, and organisational support is a fairly large area in that equation.
Peter, thank you very much. Peter Conniff is Chair of Bedfordshire Police Authority. No doubt we'll be following that story as it progresses. 08459 455 555 is the phone number if you want to comment on that. We've got Steve in Dunstable. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
Well, are you standing under a waterfall or something?
No. No, someone's engine.
Oh, you're, okay. Oh, right, okay. Well, be careful. Steve, what do you want to say?
Well, obviously you've got 2.5 million people unemployed. Can we not just take it off? Can we not take people off the dole to fill these spaces and give them an extra week's dole money or something? We're paying for them anyway. It wouldn't cost us hardly anything, would it?
Well, and plus, you go on.
Plus, as well, the quality of security. You can't have Tom, Dick and Harry. I mean, I presume these people are going to be searching people's bags. They're going to be going to people and saying, what you're doing, can you show us your pass? You've got to be trained for that kind of thing. You can't just get Tom and Dick Harry into security and just look at someone's bags. You know what I mean? There's a right way of doing things.
Well, hang on, Steve, you contradict yourself. You're saying let's just get the unemployed to do it, and then you're saying you can't have Tom, Dick and Harry.
But what I'm saying is you've obviously got to train them as well properly and make sure the people you pick off the dole queue or whatever are suitable for that. But surely, out of 2.5 million, you must be able to find 3,000, surely.
Well, I think that the people who are unemployed have been trying to apply for the jobs, and part of the problem has been that the incompetence of G4S means that the process has taken so long, they've not got those jobs.
Well, that's a fair comment. I mean, I don't know about that side of it, but that wouldn't surprise me.
And also, you wouldn't pay them if we just grabbed a load of jobless people. You wouldn't pay them.
I just said give them a week's top up on the benefit, because they're only going to be there for 3 weeks. So they'd be probably either, they might get a job out of it, they might not. That's another thing. They might get a job out of it, so it'd benefit the country, wouldn't it?
Steve, thank you very much. That's Steve's views. Maybe you agree or disagree. 08459. 455 555.
Beds, Hearts and Bucks News.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
These are your headlines this morning on BBC Three Counties Radio. It's the Bedfordshire Police Authority says it will continue looking into plans to outsource some backroom services to G4S, despite the company's problems fulfilling its Olympic contract. Peter Conniff, the chair of Bedfordshire Police Authority, says their plan to pursue a full business case hasn't changed, and it will be up to the newly appointed police commissioner to make a final decision later this year. A 30-year-old man from Buckinghamshire has been charged with manslaughter in connection with the death of a 9-week-old baby girl in Amersham in October last year. John Holmes of Pear Tree Close in Amersham has been released on conditional bail until August the 7th, when he will appear at Milton Keynes Magistrates Court. In sport, Watford play their first match under new manager Gianfranco Zola tonight as they make the short trip to Borehamwood for a pre-season friendly. I'll have a full sports bulletin in 15 minutes, weather coming up soon. And coming up on the show, we discuss proposals by Scottish ministers to allow same-sex marriage. Jonathan Vernon-Smith, you came in, you sat down in the studio and you just shivered.
It's freezing
here. I like it cold. I don't know how to change it, and I like it cold.
Do you really?
And then you sent a text on your phone.
No, I didn't.
You did something on your phone.
No, well, I was keeping track of things. Well, I didn't want to put you off, you know.
You never put me off.
I sit here staring at you, it gives you the creeps, doesn't it?
You're wearing a sweater today. You never normally wear a sweater.
No, I just felt like being a bit crazy. Coming...
Wow. What's on your show today, Jonathan?
Coming up on the big phone in this morning, I'm asking, I'd be very interested to get your view on this, because you're a parent.
Yes, I am.
Is smacking an effective punishment? A group of children's charities has called for a ban on smacking youngsters to be introduced in Scotland. The Children Are Unbeatable Coalition said young people should have the same protection from assaults as adults. A similar call for a complete ban in England and Wales was dropped back in 2002 after it was deemed to be unworkable. It's already illegal to physically punish a child in a way that leaves a mark with any sort of implement. Would you think smacking's an effective punishment, Ian?
No, you should never hit kids. If a big person hits a small person, you've lost the argument instantly.
But isn't there a difference between hitting and smacking?
No, they're both you, a big person, touching a child in a slightly aggressive way. There's never, you should never hit a child. My mum, when I was a kid, I used to be a biter. Right? When I was about 4 years old, I was a biter.
I bet you were.
I bit the cat, and I bit my sister, and I bit everything. And so my mum, she rolled up my sleeve. I was 4 years old.
And bit you.
Bit my arm really, really hard. Now, I didn't do it again, but she shouldn't have bit a 4-year-old. That's bonkers.
Well, there'll be some people who say that the lesson that taught you was invaluable. Because otherwise, if your mum hadn't done that, I mean, I may fear coming in here in the morning in case you went for one of my legs.
I'm holding myself back. I personally think you should never hit a child. I'm sure loads of your listeners will disagree with that, though.
Well, I don't know. I'm wondering whether the tide has changed now.
Right.
I mean, it's 2012. Young parents, I don't know. In this country, I don't think any of my friends smack their children.
Mm.
And I wonder whether it's something that has kind of gone out. It's gone out of fashion completely.
I don't think you should rule by fear. I think you it's harder to do it this way, but I think you should sit down and try and explain. And it's hard when they're having a tantrum, but you kind of have to sit down and explain.
Did your when you were a kid, did you ever get the whole, if you don't stop misbehaving, I'm going to stop the car and you're going to get out?
Yes.
Well, my parents did, and they left me and my brother on the hard shoulder of the M1.
Did they?
Yes.
My dad left me in Windsor once, but it wasn't on a motorway.
Right.
That's how old were you?
Young.
That's terrifying.
They went down to the next junction, turned around and came back.
They'd go to prison for that.
I know,
you could
nowadays.
Probably sue them.
Do you reckon?
I think you could probably get some money out of that, Jonathan. It's worth a go.
Great, I'll try it.
Excellent. Jonathan Vernon-Smith, 9 o'clock. See you later on. Have fun. Always worth a listen. And it's a good debate. It's one of those classic debates. It's a good debate. Smacking kids. I'm dead against it. Be keen to know what you think of it. I'm going to be listening to that later on. 08459 455 555. Let's get the latest.
Hearts and Bugs weather.
BBC do apologise. Counties Radio.
Speaking all over your jingle, Steve. I do apologise. It's Steve Weston with the weather.
You can jingle over your speech as well.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we're off to quite a decent start, aren't we? Nice bit of sunshine around. There's the forecast for you.
Steve Weston, thank you very much. I've got to move on. It always gets very busy. I like to have our chats earlier on, but it always gets very busy about 22 minutes past 8. And it's very busy now. I've got loads of texts about car insurance. I must tell you how much my car insurance costs later on. Scottish ministers will meet today to discuss plans to allow same-sex marriage. Scotland could become the first part of the UK to introduce such legislation. Oh, I pressed the wrong thing. I do apologise. Look at that. Silly me. I do apologise. I don't know where that thing is in the computer, so we'll skip that. Gay rights campaigners concede there is little legal difference between same-sex marriage and civil partnerships, which were introduced throughout the UK in 2005. But they insist the ability to marry in a religious setting is vital to achieve true equality. The idea has provoked fierce opposition from some religious groups. We've got Richard Atkinson, who is the Bishop of Bedford and opposes gay marriage, on the line. Good morning, Reverend.
Good morning.
Do I call you Reverend or Bishop, or what's the correct term?
Call me Bishop.
Bishop, why do you oppose gay marriage?
Well, let's be clear what we're talking about. And can I first of all say, of course, the Church of England has no jurisdiction in Scotland, and therefore the Scottish question is a separate question from our point of view. Secondly, this is not about... this is about which question we're trying to answer. As far as I'm concerned, the Church of England, and indeed I hope the Christian Church, is there for all people, whatever... Their identity. But there is a question about civil partnership and marriage, and whether those are equivalent. And at the moment, as far as I'm... the question that I want people to consider is, what is marriage? It's we've had a definition of marriage for most of history, of the union of one man and one woman, of something that represents something particular about family, not exclusively. And as you've actually said, legally, we have civil partnership and we have marriage. And what I think is that there are two complementary things, but we don't need to equate them.
But civil partnership doesn't sound very romantic or loving. It sounds kind of quite cold and technical. Why can't we change the definition?
Well, maybe we need a different name. But I think, you know, in the end, it can't be about semantics. It is about human relationships.
Mm.
It's about recognising and honouring those. But I'm anxious if we, in what is a very rapid process, throw away something that has been honoured and treasured at the heart of family life. Now, that can sound exclusive, and I'm not trying to sound exclusive, and I'm not trying to sound judgmental, but I think we do need to think, what is marriage, so that we're clear where we're going as a society.
What will happen if gay marriage gets the thumbs up in Scotland and or England?
What will happen? Well, first of all, it will be good news for lots of couples. But there's then a separate question about what churches will do, and it is up for the church to decide what is appropriate. And as you know, the Church of England is still in the middle of a debate about where we are on the wider sexuality issues. I think it's a related but again distinct question. And we're reviewing that again. Many would say that we haven't got to the right place yet. But I think I'm just very anxious that we separate out the questions. And it seems to me, I want to celebrate human relationship. We have two complementary things, equal in law. But we lose something. We potentially lose something if we give up on marriage.
But it's not giving up on marriage, is it? I think, isn't it just, it's just about love, isn't it? It's just about two people saying they are very much in love and wish to commit the rest of their lives together.
We want to celebrate that. But marriage has been about the union of a man and a woman, and it represents something about family and procreation, which is a difficult word.
I don't think it does represent. When I got married, it was the procreation part was never part of it. It was us celebrating in front of our friends and making a commitment that we were in love, and this was a lifelong thing. And obviously, gay people could do that as well, can't they?
Yes, indeed, and that's what's done in civil partnerships, which is the term used at the moment. If this is a debate about the blessing of that and celebrating of that in church, there's a separate question. Well, for my mind, you know, should civil partnerships be recognised in church? And that's where the Church of England at the moment is still reflecting. And
what do you think about that, Bishop?
What do I think? I'm following that debate. The House of Bishops hasn't come to mind.
Very, very well sidestepped, sir. Thank you very much. It's fascinating. Fascinating. It's Richard Atkinson, the Bishop of Bedford, who opposes gay marriage. 08459 455 555. You've got about 33 minutes or so to give us a call on that. We've got Dennis in Dunstable. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning.
Dennis, what can I do for you, sir?
This railway debate.
Yes.
Why do we need this extra train, fairly fast one, going to Birmingham, which apparently will get you there 15 minutes earlier than the normal train?
Yeah.
When with electronic and television conferences, why do we have to go to Birmingham in the first place?
Why would you want to go to Birmingham in the first place?
Well, I mean, okay, so you want to go shopping. Well, what's wrong with the internet?
Yeah.
And your office alone, where you are now, how many people in your office really need to be there that they couldn't work from home?
I'll be honest, hardly any of them.
But I'm trying to say to you,
We live in a world where we can communicate and we can work very comfortably from home. And it does seem a lot of money to spend on trains when some of them, it's going to be, 15 minutes quicker.
Yeah. I mean, that train trip going up there, he's wasting time for the fella who's going for the conference. He could have done that from home 3 hours earlier, you know?
So, Dennis, you're a fan of working from home. Can I ask you, sir, how old are you?
I'm 87.
You seem very up on all this computer technology and television conferencing.
Well, I've grown up with it. I mean, I started in the drawing office with a pencil, then we went to ink, then we went to computers, and I was trained for computer. And so we printed stuff there.
Yeah.
We don't need to travel. I mean, you know, in the office, you pick up the phone and talk to somebody. Why do all these people rush up to London every morning? How many of those people are active workers who are not sat on the backside doing something in an office, which they don't need to do, they could do from home?
Dennis, thank you very much. Strong views there from Dennis in Dunstable. We don't need to spend all this money on trains, because we don't need trains.
Call
08459 455 555.
08459 455 555.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
We're talking about car insurance earlier on. And I cannot remember for the life of... we had young people driving, that was it. And you've been sending me your texts and your car insurance. I'm amazed at how little a lot of you are paying. We'll read those a bit later on and I'll give you mine. But before that, an IQ expert says that women have overtaken men in IQ tests for the first time since records began. Story was in the papers, I mentioned it on the show yesterday, and I'm wondering how you rate someone's intelligence. Earlier on, I spoke to Chris Tyler. He's the chairman of Mensa, the High IQ Society.
And really, it measures people's ability to process information. One of the tests is based on numbers, one of the tests is based on words, because some people have problems with one, but it doesn't mean they're any less intelligent.
I should tell you, two of the members of the team of this show, one of them scored 69, and the other one scored 91. It's not good, is it? It's not good. I'm going to do mine after the show. I'm going to have a little go after the show and we'll see. Our reporter, Justin Dealey, has been finding out just how clever women in the Three Counties are.
Up first is Misty. Misty, I picked you because you look intelligent. Do you feel intelligent?
No, not this morning, I don't know.
And what about men? Do you think men in general are a bit stupid?
No, I don't think I do, actually, no.
Well said, I like you. So, are you prepared for your IQ question?
I'm prepared, yes.
It's a toughie, this one. Okay. 30 years ago, it would have taken a worker 5 hours to make a chair. Today, it takes him just 30 minutes. Is that because A, man has become more industrious, B, people work faster in order to avoid unemployment, C, chairs have a shorter life cycle, D, workers have more spare time, or E, productivity has increased?
God, I've forgotten the first question now. That went on forever.
I know it did. Man has become more industrious. People work faster in order to avoid unemployment. Chairs have a shorter life cycle. Workers have more spare time, or productivity has increased.
Okay, life cycle then. We'll go with that one.
The answer, in actual fact, is productivity has increased.
That one. Jules,
I knew you was going to say that as well. Apparently, the four other statements are based on assumptions not made in the starting statement. Right. You have failed on the question, but overall, you seem quite intelligent to me. I'm now here with Catherine. Catherine, you're wearing glasses. You must be intelligent, surely.
No, not really.
Well, let's try you out with one of these questions. Are you ready for an IQ question?
Yes.
You think so? You think so? Okay, here we go. So, here's my IQ question for you. The day before yesterday is 3 days after Saturday. What day is the day? I'm going to read that to you again.
Tuesday.
You're going to go for Tuesday?
Yeah.
The correct answer, in actual fact, is Friday. The reason being, 3 days after Saturday is Tuesday, then the day before yesterday was Wednesday, brackets Tuesday being the day before yesterday, therefore today is Friday. Does that make sense? Have a good day shopping, enjoy yourself. And lastly in this feature is Daphne, who's got a very posh accent. Daphne, it doesn't surprise you that women are more intelligent than men, does it at all?
Well, I was being facetious. Because I'm a woman.
Of course you're
more
intelligent.
And we girls have got to stick together.
Yes, absolutely. So here's your question. You had a very high IQ when you were younger. It's a maths one, this one. Okay.
I'm very good at maths.
Well, let's give it a try. Please enter the missing figure, okay, off the back of this. So we've got 3, 5, 8, 13 and 21. Please enter the missing figure, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21.
16.
No, the answer was 34. Would you like to know why?
Yes, I would.
Okay, the reason being the two previous numerals are added. Example, 3 plus 5 equals 8. But it doesn't matter.
I understand.
Yes. She did have a very posh voice, that last lady there. Well done, Justin. I got two out of those three right. I didn't get the last one right. I would have got it right if I'd have had it in front of me and I could have seen it. I know that for a fact. I'm going to do my IQ test after the show. And I'll let you know. That'll get you all excited. I got the first two right quite quickly. It's what used to be called, in my day, verbal reasoning. And it's when I took the 11 plus. Was it 11 plus or the 12 plus? 11 plus. And it was those kind of things. You had to just work out silly questions like that and make sense of them. That's how it worked, I think. We were talking about... No, by the way, no one has called in to tell me your IQ. which is disappointing. I can't be broadcasting to a bunch of thickos. I know that the BBC Three Counties audience is highly, highly intelligent people. That's why you choose this. You've still got 20 minutes if you want to give me a call before Jonathan comes in. 08459 455 555. What is your IQ? Don't be embarrassed. If you've got a low IQ, you can come in under a pseudonym. That means a different name. We're talking about car insurance. Vic has texted in. The wife's Corsa costs £199, fully comp. Mind you, both her and the car are fairly old. That's rude, Vic. Come on. That's rude. Poor car. My insurance, says Phil, is only £153 for fully comp, including protected no claims, because I've been driving for 24 years and choose to drive a mature 1 litre engine car and do no more than 3,000 miles a year. I'm lucky enough to live 2 miles from where I work, but I've had years where I've paid more, but nowhere near what some poor devils are being charged, says Phil. Tim has texted in, 81333, starting his text 3CR. My insurance costs are Fiat Ducato van, £430, Fiat Multipla, £350, Fiat Panda, £220, and two classic Fiats. He likes Fiats, does Tim. Got a thing for Fiat. £160 the pair, all fully comp, and that's per year. Right, my insurance, and this was after going to a broker to get a cheaper car insurance. My insurance is £1,060 a year. Before that, the company I was at, they put it up from £1,600 a year to £1,800 a year. And that's when I went, do you know what? Ta-ta! I'm off. Now, the reason is, yes, okay, I've got a few. I've got some speeding fines. I do some speeding fines. They go off my licence this year, I think. Maybe next year. And yes, I had a couple of knocks in the last 5 years. Although, the two big knocks weren't my fault. One, a roof blew off a building and crushed the car. The other one, a drunk driver smashed into it when it was parked up. And also, it's because of my job. And I mentioned this when I was filling in for Jonathan. Because of my job, they think I'm going to have, like, Burt Reynolds or Paul McCartney in my car. And if I crash with Paul McCartney in my car, it could cost them millions. So they kind of up the feet. And I've done all the, not dodges, but, you know, I've been as honest as I need to be. I think I'm on there as a broadcaster or something like that. But that's why it costs so much money. 08459 455 555. We've got Mary in Hemel. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
You called in about G4S. What's your take on this?
Well, the thing is, all these concessions and all arrangements were made with Labour, when the Labour Party were in. And I'm just wondering if this G4 thing is any link or coincidence, could you might say, because John Reid is one of the directors.
Well, now, I have to just say, for obvious reasons, that we are not in any way implying that there is anything dodgy or underhand going on, that this is all above board and legitimate.
Oh, you're not implying it.
No,
I am.
Well, you're not allowed to imply it, Mary. You're not allowed to imply it because you get in trouble, I get in trouble, and the BBC gets in trouble. So no one's implying it in the slightest.
Oh, so we don't have freedom of speech, mind you. We haven't had that for a long time.
Well, freedom of speech, if you want to go in that debate, it doesn't exist. You know it doesn't exist.
So, that's true.
It certainly doesn't exist on the radio, and I'll tell you why. Because if freedom of speech existed, not just on the BBC, but on any radio station, I could come on here and I could libel people, I could swear, I could say what I wanted. And of course I can't do that. And that's a good thing, isn't it? Because that protects me and it protects the listener as well.
Yes, but the trouble is, there's freedom of speech and freedom of speech. We've now gone so far the other way, you can't say anything about anybody.
Well, the thing about...
They can't call one another liars.
Well,
no, they are.
The thing about doing it on the radio is it is libel, and it would involve you getting a heavy fine, me getting a heavy fine, and probably losing my job, and the station being a heavy fine. So that's a law. That's not political correctness. That's the law, and it's always been the law. So
all
that's,
right,
that makes sense.
That, I still feel...
Okay, I'm worried you're going to say it again, Mary, so we should move on. Thank you very much for your point. It's a law that's always been there, and it's one that I am more than happy to uphold, that you can't libel someone on the radio, and it is libel, not slander. I won't go into details of why that's the case, but it is. So sorry to move on, Mary, but we just have to be very careful around these things. Pat in Ebershaw. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Ian.
Car insurance.
Yes.
What are you paying?
£93 a year.
My heart just gave away there slightly. Why?
It's a classic car insurance. It's £10,000 worth of MGB.
Yeah.
But classic car insurance is not expensive because people that drive classic cars don't go mad in them.
But it's the other people that you've got that go mad, not you.
Yes.
If someone bumps into that, that's an... My car's a Polo, a 1.2 Polo that's 6 years old, and it's I'm paying 1,060 quid.
Yes. Well, get yourself an MGB.
Yeah.
Put it on classic car insurance.
Right.
And that car, that's limited mileage.
Right, okay.
3,000 miles a year. Classic car insurance is not expensive.
Pat, I'm in. I'm in. I'm sold. Anything that's going to save money. Thank you very much, Pat. Sorry to move on, but it always gets busy in the last half hour of the show, and I want to be sure that we fit in as many callers as we can. 08459 455
555. Beds, Hearts and Bugs News.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
These are your headlines this morning at 8:46 on BBC Three Counties Radio. Bedfordshire Police Authority says it will continue looking into plans to outsource some backroom services to G4S, despite the company's problems fulfilling its Olympic contract. Peter Conniff, the chair of Bedfordshire Police Authority, says their plan to pursue a full business case hasn't changed, and it will be up to the newly appointed police commissioner, to make a final decision later this year. One of the founding members of the rock group Deep Purple, John Lord, has died. The 71-year-old keyboard player had been receiving treatment for pancreatic cancer. Deep Purple was formed in Hertfordshire in 1968 and are considered to be among the pioneers of heavy metal. In sport, Watford play their first match under new manager Gianfranco Zola tonight as they make the short trip to Boreham Wood for a pre-season friendly. The weather for Beds, Hearts and Bucks, mainly dry with some bright or even sunny spells, but an isolated shower is possible. Top temperature of 21 degrees Celsius.
Jonathan Vernon-Smith, weekday mornings from 9 on BBC Three Counties Radio.
Jonathan's show this morning is going to be a corker. He's asking, should you smack children? Now, I'm supposed to be impartial, but I can tell you the answer to that question. The answer to that question is no, you should not. Once a big person hits a small person, you've lost the argument. I'm going to be listening to Jonathan's show with great anticipation. This is exciting. People from Bedfordshire and Hertfordshire feature in a film about our region, which has its premiere tonight. On Landguard Point is being screened at the Watford Palace Theatre, which is a fantastic theatre. I've performed there. It's a great place. It's linked to a cultural Olympiad project held in May, when people in Potton in Bedfordshire took part in an archaeological dig to find historical artefacts in their back garden. We've got Naomi Gornall on the phone. Good morning, Naomi.
Good morning.
Well, I avoided saying the company's name there, because I don't know how to pronounce it. What is the company?
It's a Pacitti company.
It's a Pacitti. I would have gone for the Pacitti, I would have been completely wrong. This film sounds fun. How did it come about?
The film was commissioned by the Arts Council from... we entered into a bid to win the money for the Cultural Olympiad for the East. And we were lucky enough to do that. The project's artists leading the artist project. We're really excited. It's taken a couple of years of research. It's now kind of touring in the East as we speak.
What stories do you have of the people who are involved from our area?
So what we did is 2 years ago we put out a region-wide call out, really asking for submissions to our encyclopedia that we're setting up, and we've drawn together 205 symbols from people's stories, their facts about the region. So we've collated all them, and we've also done the archaeological digs, as you mentioned there. We did one in Ashwell and one in Potton, and so it was all that kind of the work that we got from that was helped to research the film, really.
And the archaeological digs, they were in people's back gardens?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, so people kind of took a square in their back gardens, digged up some stuff. We found all sorts of amazing stuff that you...
What kind of stuff did you find in the back gardens?
So we found there was a prehistoric arrowhead in one of them. We found, you know, Anglo-Saxon pottery.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Did you have to go deep to find that kind of stuff? Or is it kind of something that anyone can do?
Oh, anyone can do it. I mean, it was literally the prehistoric arrowhead was actually found in the very first section, which mustn't have been more than half a metre down.
So how exciting.
Really shallow stuff that we found, yeah.
How does this link in with the Cultural Olympiad?
So the Cultural Olympiad runs alongside the Olympics, and it's all about celebrating the culture of the country. We're just excited that we were chosen to represent the East of England, and... you know, there are obviously symbolisms to the Olympics. The 205 symbols that we've brought together represent 205 nations involved in the Olympics. And the film generally is all about home and what home means to us, which is obviously really important to show to the Olympic nations that we're hosting.
Any real characters that stand out from the film?
I'll let people watch themselves, but there's definitely humour in it.
Brilliant.
And there's an Elvis impersonator, so there's plenty to look out for.
And it's being screened at the Watford Palace Theatre tonight.
Yeah, that's right.
People can get, there's still tickets available?
Yeah, tickets available. It starts at 7:30 and it's about 80 minutes.
Naomi, have a fantastic night. I hope you enjoy
it. Thank you. Take care. Great.
There we go. That's Naomi Gornall talking about On Langard Point, which is being screened at the Watford Palace Theatre this evening. It sounds great, doesn't it? I love that, finding old artifacts in the back garden. That's superb. If you listen to Nick Coffer's show, he's got Barry from Watford on today. It's definitely worth listening from midday. Well, as I was saying earlier on in the news, one of the founding members of Hertfordshire's rock group, Deep Purple, John Lord, has died. He was 71 and had been receiving treatment for pancreatic cancer. He co-wrote many of the band's most famous songs. Let's take you back in time with a reminder of some of their greatest hits. Black Knight, Black Knight, now call me Black Knight, I can't see. I cannot tell you how cool it is that I'm playing Deep Purple on BBC Three Counties Radio. Superb. The band formed in Hertford in 1968. Tributes have been pouring in on Twitter, including Brian Adams, who says, rest in peace, John Lord. Incredible organist for Deep Purple, one of my fave bands growing up. They were one of the bands that invented heavy metal. You listen to that guitar. That dirty guitar and that fat bass, that didn't exist. Alice Cooper says on Twitter, heartbroken after hearing John Lord has passed away. Our thoughts go out to John's family, friends and indeed Deep Purple. Well, our reporter Justin Dealey has been to St Albans to meet hardcore rocker Peter Morphew.
Hey, Peter, as a massive music fan, as a massive rocker really, you're very upset about this news, aren't you?
Yeah, very upset. I mean, when you think about the music they brought out, you know, really early stuff was absolutely brilliant. You know, compared with today's music, you know, today's music is rubbish compared with what they brought out years ago. And I just can't believe, you know, something like that has happened to him.
It's every week at the moment, isn't it? We're hearing about all these legends which are sadly passing on. Yeah. Somebody who grew up with that music, it's clearly very upsetting for you because a big part of your life has gone
as well. Yeah, well, I mean, it was just, there's nothing really that you can say about it because, I mean, the music was different. The beat was different. Today's music hasn't got a patch on it because it's the same beat all the way through. Mm. And half of it, I mean, it's just like that rap music. I mean,
Don't start me on rap music.
No, I think it's a load of rubbish because I think they talk like that because they can't sing, basically, at the end of the day.
I love your honesty. Smoke on the Water, the greatest guitar riff of all time. What do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And it's just like the, you know, Pink Floyd. I mean, their guitars were exactly the same, you know, the same type of guitar music. And the music then was brilliant.
You go absolutely everywhere with your music. You're listening to music on the streets in St Albans today. Yeah. Just lastly, when you listen to Deep Purple at home, you've got so many of their albums. When you listen to it, is there only one way to listen to that music? And that's loud, very loud.
But the only trouble is your next-door neighbours hate it. They keep knocking on your front door to turn around and say, turn it down, please. We want a bit of peace and quiet.
That's actually happened, is it?
Yeah, very often, yeah. But no, we have to obey what they do, because otherwise they report you to the council and then you get kicked out your house and you don't want that walking around the streets. They have nothing to listen to at the end of the day.
And Espo, for listening to Deep Purple too loud. Thanks for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
You do not want to get kicked out of your house for listening to music too loud. That's definitely one thing. There have seem to have been a lot of people kind of dying recently. A lot of these people. Davy Jones of the Monkees. Now, I'm obsessed with the Monkees. And when Davy Jones of the Monkees died, I was with my little boy. It was about 7:30 at night, and I was singing Daydream Believer to him, which is his favourite song. He's 2 and a half. He knows all the words to Daydream Believer. And I was singing Daydream Believer to him, and I got a text saying, oh, sad news about Davy Jones. I was like, what? And then immediately later, another friend said, oh, you heard the news about Davy Jones? I remember going, no, what's happened? And he died. And I was in tears. I always laugh at people. I don't laugh at them, that's cruel. Let me say, I always think it's strange when people cry when a celebrity dies. Like when Michael Jackson died, there was an outpouring. And when Whitney Houston died, there was this weird outpouring. But when Davy Jones died, I was in floods of tears. I was devastated. I've only cried for three celebrities. Davy Jones, George Harrison, and a guy called Arthur Lee, who you won't have heard of. He was in a band called Love. Those three. George Harrison, I had a few tears. Davy Jones, I was sobbing like a baby. Sobbing like a baby when Davy Jones died. And part of it was, I was trying to work out why, I am obsessed with the Monkees. But part of it was, I think, is because he'd sort of been such an important part of my childhood. I always used to watch the Monkees when I was like 8 years old. It was always on in the summer holidays. You'd always watch that before you went out on your bike and did whatever. And so I guess I was kind of mourning part of my childhood dying. Anyway, there you go. Car insurance on the texts. Ian, my insurance for my 1976 Citroen is £162 for the year, which includes Class 1 business use with a classic car insurer. Well, there you go. We're talking about rail travel earlier on as well, with the £9 billion investment into the rail. And I was speaking to an MP about how is it cheaper for me to fly to Glasgow than it is to get the train? And Bev in Bedford has texted. Rail travel. Like you, I'm going to Glasgow in August to visit a friend. Back in June, checked out the train prices, nearly wet myself. 2 to 3 times more than flying with a certain airline. So for your guest to say book early is absolute poppycock. Your guest obviously does not travel by train or has a substantial discount. Well, I don't know if that's the case, but it is amazing, isn't it, how much it costs to go by train. I love train travel. I think it's such a civilised way to travel, especially if you go first class. I know, I don't always, but I treat myself from occasion. If you're on the train, it's only like £15 to upgrade. If you're in a noisy carriage, I sometimes think, well, you know what? It's worth it, just to get a bit of peace and quiet. But it's very expensive. And Bev says, Ian, please tell Beds Police not to give G4 any contracts. Why not pass the outsourcing to wonderful small businesses who can do the job just as well? I would be very surprised if Bedfordshire Police went with G4S. They're now committed, aren't they, to doing the review and following the review through. And as we were told earlier on, it's costing them money to do these reviews. So to suddenly pull out would perhaps be slightly disingenuous. But would they go with them? Be interesting to find out, won't it? I'm not sure. Thank you so much for all of your calls and your emails and texts this morning. I think we managed to get away with another show without anybody getting hurt. Nobody was particularly injured, so that always makes a bonus. If everyone comes out of the show alive and well, then I'm happy. Do stick around, because next it's Jonathan Vernon Smith. He's asking, is smacking ever an effective punishment? I'm really interested to hear what you think about this. 08459 455 555. Latest news now with Simon Oxley.
Getting Beds, Hearts and Bucks talking.
This is BBC Three Counties Radio.